What's up, everybody, and welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Tuesday, June 30th, 2020. I am your host today in a weird combination, Imran Khan, joining me, Blessing Adeyoye Jr. Blessing, how you Imran, doing?
What's up? How's it going? We usually don't do this.
There was a, you guys were just, you got it from a slumber just now because you were just covering some dreams.
Yeah, oh, exactly. Yeah, no, me and Greg
that was good.
We were covering Dreamscom. We were doing a live reaction to it that you can catch on the Twitch VODs if you want to. It was a good time. Like, Dreams is one of those games where it came out, and I think there was a community there for it. Like, me, I loved it. Greg loved it. And over the year, it's kind of, excitement has kind of dissipated in a way that's kind of been kind of unfortunate, because that's kind of just what happens when newer, bigger games come out.
And you released an early access, so that kind of takes away a little bit for the release.
Yeah, exactly. The actual launch of the game didn't have that big pop. It didn't have that big push. And so they've essentially been doing these streams where earlier in the year they did like a Dreams Awards kind of stream, and this one was more so like a dev showcase. And they've been pretty fun. They've been pretty cool.
They announced PSVR for that today, right?
Yes.
Okay.
They did announce PSVR.
I figured that was going to be coming down the line at some point. It just odd that didn't make it at launch, but cool. It's cool that it's coming now.
Yeah, coming out July 22nd. And it's one of those things where when Greg brought it up to me on stream, we kind of had the question of, all right, did it already come out? Is this a thing that we just didn't realize is already there? And yeah, no, it seems like it's coming through. And I'm excited to check that out, because what they showed in the trailer actually looked cool as far as what the VR features are and what that can entail.
There's a kind of funny Dreams community. I've seen them make things. I don't know if they're still making things. But here's my challenge to the kind of funny Dreams community. Make a game called The Roper Report. Whatever that game is, it needs to be thematically like that. I just want to see a game called The Roper Report.
I'm down for it. Please.
It could be a high wire game. Whatever it is, I want to see your interpretation.
If you're a twin stick shooter.
Or you can make it Tetris, but the pieces are us. You know what I mean? 8-bit pieces of us.
If we get back in the studio, can we get the green screen and just, like, make the Tetris pieces?
Okay, now I'm in. Kevin said that before, I was like, oh, no.
I will go to the studio and we'll stay 6 feet apart and we can do this now if you want, is all I'm
saying. The idea that, like, I'm just, like, doing the straight line like this, and, like, Greg is doing, like, an L shape with his body, and then Tim is doing, like, some kind of figuring out how to make the T. I don't know how that works, but Tim's making like a T shape like this. I'm into it. I like it.
Here's the thing: when Salty Bet was a big thing, I wanted to get a green screen and just make my own fighting game character. Because I feel like it's a reasonable process. You just make the poses and take the pictures and like green screen everything out.
What are you talking, like a Mortal Kombat?
Yeah, like that
fighting style.
Like that.
Oh man,
let's
100%.
Make a game. Let's do it. I'm
let's
down.
Do a kind of funny Mortal Kombat. Mortal kind of. We'll figure
kinda
it out.
Combat. Kinda combat.
Yeah, kind of combat. There, that works perfectly.
That's brilliant. I love this idea. So it just keeps getting better and better. I'm proud of you guys.
Let's do it.
Speaking of getting better and better, we got a bunch of stories today, Blessing. We got more scuttlebutt about Xbox Lockhart, a delay for Nintendo's theme park, some implications about the future of PSVR, and more. Because this is Kind of Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live, right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, roosterteeth.com, or listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kind of Funny Games Daily. To be part of the show, head to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where bronze members are above get to write in, and silver members are above get the show ad-free, along with an exclusive daily post-show. For a little bit of housekeeping real quick, thank you to our Patreon producers, Muhammad Muhammad, Connor Nolan, and Blackjack. Today, we're brought to you by Brooklyn, but Blessing will tell you about that later.
I will.
For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We got 7 stories today.
A Baker's Dozen!
It sounds like you're saying it like falling off a building.
That's because he is.
Kevin will go very far for his art.
Kevin goes far for the show. Kevin puts his life on the line to keep the show floating, and I love it.
It's good Foley work. All right, so the Xbox Lockhart. We all know what that is, and if you don't know what that is the supposedly existent, cheaper version of the Xbox Series X. Xbox Lockhart is intended to release after Series X. This is from Thurrott.com. It's written by Brad Sam. Initially, the console was going to be announced in June, but the latest reports say August. But I, to Brad, can't independently verify that yet. Here's a fun fact, though. The original launch plans for Lockhart was that it was going to be released in mid-October. That may not sound all that surprising, but Anaconda, the Series X, was going to release in late August. Clearly, plans have been adjusted based on COVID-19. No surprise that those dates have slipped and that the announcement timeline for Lockhart has been more fluid than what we've seen in previous years. That's why it's a bit hard to lock down the exact date, but the announcement should be coming sooner rather than later. So we're in a bit of a flux with current Xbox hardware announcements. We know the Series X exists. They've not officially in any way confirmed Lockhart, but it does seem to be the worst kept secret in the world right now. But now Brad Sams is saying we would have gotten, let me read this to make sure I'm not messing this order up. Going to be announced in June and reports say August. So now we're looking at an August announcement for it. The original launch plans for Lockhart was going to be released mid-October. So that's after Series X, which is intended to have been released in late August.
That's right. All that sounds wild to me. Like, in a way where I'm like, I trust Brad Sams as a reporter here. But if you came to me and told me that, like, yeah, the Xbox Series X is going to come out late August and you're going to get the Series S or the Lockhart in September, I'd be like, all right, why? Like, that doesn't sound like a thing that makes sense. Because all of our predictions have been, all right, yeah, November makes sense. There was that quote-unquote leak, and I'll give them the benefit of the doubt that this is just a mistake, where earlier in the year the Microsoft website updated to say Thanksgiving.
I don't understand how you can make a mistake with art. Like, they actually physically put the word Thanksgiving as part of the thing.
Yeah, but also they have been using the word holiday to describe the release window. And so August doesn't really make sense if you're saying holiday. And so I don't know how much I buy that. I do buy the idea that Lockhart exists because it's been kind of an open secret. Lockhart coming out after the Xbox Series X, I think, is the most interesting thing here, because in a way I could see that making sense. Like, I don't know. Now that we have the PS5 announced and we have the PS5 and the PS5 Digital Edition that are both assumably coming out on the same day, I guess now it kind of make less sense. But in a world where we don't know that, in a world where PS5 is just coming out and being the PS5, Xbox Series X coming out on a date and then them following up with a different SKU of it, let's say months later, in order to drill down the fact that, yeah, Xbox Series X is the one that we want to push hard, because that is what we see as the most powerful console. That is what we see as the most ideal experience. That's what we see as the point in which we want to get you in for sure. And then following that up a bit later with, all right, now here's Lockhart for those that couldn't afford that first one, or for those that didn't want to chalk up the cash for the first one. Here's this scaled down experience that we're treating as somewhat of a lesser experience, because we want you to experience these games the best way possible. I feel like it makes sense from that perspective, but other than that, like, this is all interesting to me.
So in the story, he actually does go a little bit into the idea of the lesser experience of the Lockhart. And the way he puts it is that all the technology that's in the Series X is going to still be in Lockhart, in that, like, it's still going to have ray tracing, it's still going to have a much better processor, all that jazz. The difference is mainly going to be, if you want 4K, you get the Series X. If you want 1080p, you get the Lockhart. That seems reasonable, especially in the way that Microsoft is trying to blur the lines between generations. So I could see them going, like, it's not necessarily a lesser experience. It's, you don't have a 4K TV, you're not going to buy a 4K TV, or you don't care about it that much. Here's something you can afford.
Yeah.
That said, like, COVID, I'm sure, has thrown off plans in that sense, in more than just, like, manufacturing and design processes. I'm sure they're looking at, say, the way, like, unemployment numbers and things like that, in a way that, like, are people really going to be able to afford, or will they, if we put the more expensive system out first, will people buy that, or will they just wait for the least expensive one? And if that's the case, why not just release them simultaneously?
Yeah, and that's the other ripple to it, too, is that what is the difference here, especially if we're talking about hardware supply and pretty much all the reporting and theories that, yeah, these consoles are going to sell out at launch, because they're not, like, the supply for these consoles aren't going to mirror the PS4 and Xbox One in terms of how much supply is out there. Given COVID, given just these being more expensive boxes in general, right? Like they're scaling back as far as how many of these things they're making, because given that they're more expensive, less people are going to come out and buy them for that reason. Yeah. And so that being the case, doing that staggered option, I don't know how much sense that makes for them in terms of, I guess, selling through, because you imagine that the way they're looking at it, if they are looking at it this way, everything's going to sell through, like everything's going to sell out. And so why even stagger them if that's going to be the case?
Yeah. And even personally, I'm someone who owns every system and will continue to own every system, but I'm looking at this year's launch and being like, I don't know that I will buy both consoles at once, if only because, like, I don't think I necessarily need to, especially with the way the generations are blurring and all that jazz. But yeah. Like, I don't know, dropping $1,000 for two consoles later this year, and we're just assuming that's a price, it could actually be more or could be less, who knows? That seems like a big ask for nothing that has shown me that I need both consoles at launch.
Especially the Xbox. Because I feel like you can make the argument that, yeah, Spider-Man Miles Morales can probably only play on your PS5. Horizon Forbidden West is going to be a PS5 game. Like, there are games that are coming out that you can only play on the PS5. But if you have a PC or if you have an Xbox One, for like the first year at least, you're going to be pretty good as far as being able to play whatever Microsoft has going on the Xbox side. Halo Infinite, you're going to play on Xbox. You can play on Xbox One. Hellblade's newest saga, it's going to be on PC. Like, pretty much all of the first party Xbox stuff comes out on PC for the most part, with like rare exception. I don't know if I'm sure that there might be one or two exceptions. I can't even think of them right now.
The only ones I can think of are on PC and not on Xbox.
Yeah, exactly. Like, the ones that I'm thinking of are, I think that Gears Tactics. Yeah, like that came out on PC first. And I think that might even still be coming to Xbox. I'm not sure.
It is at some point, but right now it's only on PC.
Yeah, and so I think there's a less compelling case if you're a person that plans to buy both consoles to get Xbox right off the bat. That said, Lockhart could be that thing, right? And it's especially depending on what exactly it is, because there have been multiple theories. I know Tim has been predicting that. What if it is just a streaming box? What if it is a thing that you can get in for $100? That could be a very compelling case for so many people if they just want to hop in and play games and not want to make it rain in the Microsoft store, which I guess rest in peace the Microsoft store. But yeah, like, depending on what Lockhart is, that could be a defining factor for so many people as far as what that purchasing decision is, you know, wherever it scales, right? If it's a $200 thing or a $300 thing, depending on how much weaker it is than the Xbox Series X, all that stuff comes into play, and all that stuff I think is going to be big in that decision for people.
Yeah, to be clear, like, this is by intention. This is Microsoft's design for this coming thing, is they don't want you to necessarily feel pressured to buy a new system. They are fine with you staying with an Xbox One or buying a cheaper one or whatever, as long as you're in the ecosystem. That is their entire game plan. So it's hard to compare them and Sony, but at the same time, like, as somebody that will be going to a Best Buy or whatever, or already online at the end of this year, being like, what system do I want? I would probably end up with a PS5 more likely, but also where the enthusiast audience is not necessarily the audience I think Microsoft is shooting for.
I can see that. A
quick question here. So wouldn't it make sense that it's interesting that the flagship is the one with the disc reader? Because wouldn't they make more money if you're just buying the games online?
Yes. And that's one of the things I was thinking about the other day of, like, what if Sony just releases all their special edition consoles with the discless edition? Because that does encourage people to just kind of... I know people get up in arms when I say this, but to console manufacturers, making disc versions is more of a pain than you would think, as well as for third-party publishers, because you have to have minimum orders for printing and stuff like that. So I could see them wanting to wean people off physical editions over time, even though some people really like those. But I could see, it's definitely the first time I saw that, be like, oh, I see what they want to do here. Whether they get there this generation is a different question.
Yeah, and I think it's the thing of, I don't know how ready we are for the flagship edition to be the discless version. I think Sony and Microsoft would 100% want that. I think that is their dream. And I think them releasing discless versions of their console is them building toward that dream and essentially prepping us to be ready for that. But I think when you look at the Xbox One, the way in which that console released in 2013, there are so many ideas there that Microsoft had for that console that were either in some ways not consumer friendly or in other ways too future looking in a way that I think for so many of us put us off, because we're like, oh, what do you mean I can only play my game on my console and I can't like share that stuff? What do you mean this? What do you mean that? When really like what they're doing was kind of prepping for where we're going now with this kind of all digital future and what this ecosystem is going to start looking like. I think if either company would come out and make the discless version the flagship and like the most front-facing thing, like it's not going to be death for them by any means, but I do think you see a lot of people have that taste in their mouth like, oh man, I don't necessarily like discless. I think for us here in this podcast, we'd be down for it because we probably play most of our games digital anyway. Mm-hmm. But I think there's a wider public that looks at that and goes, oh man, I don't know, man, I'm gonna get the disc version anyway because like, why wouldn't I? That's the one that's gonna let me play any game I want to.
Yeah, that's kind of where I am too. Like, I probably would not buy a disc game for the foreseeable future, but the fact that I wouldn't be able to buy a disc game drives me crazy.
Exactly.
So I would just buy this version.
Yeah, and I think it has that bad taste in the mouth for players, and then also for stores like Best Buy and Walmart and people that are going to be selling these consoles. You don't want to piss them off because as we've seen in the theater business. In the movie theater business, I forget what movie it was, but there's basically a studio that was like, oh yeah, we've seen so much return on just releasing our movies digital that we want to go digital and theater for our movies going forward. And some theaters were like,
yeah, Trolls.
Was it Trolls? Yeah, and yeah. Theaters were like, fuck that, we're not having your movies in theaters anymore. I could see Best Buy doing the same thing. I could see Target doing the same thing and go, oh, you want to sell people on digital? All right, good luck selling these consoles because we ain't selling this shit. Like, I could see that happening.
Well, it's also because, I mean, Sony is very specifically not working with game stores anymore on a digital future because, like, they pulled back the idea of selling game cards in stores. Now it's you can only buy PSN credit, so you have to be in our ecosystem. You can't just go to the GameStop and be like, hey, give me one Horizon 2 card. You have to actually, like, okay, give me $75 worth of PSN credit. I'm going to have $15 left over, which means I'm going to have to spend that on something else in the future.
Yes, it's very much a balancing act and a push and pull of the console manufacturers versus companies, and then the console manufacturers trying to balance out like what the public is ready for. And so I think by the time we get to the PS6 and whatever the next Xbox, I guess, generation is, whether that's still the series or not, I think we'll get to that point where the digital version is the most front-facing version of the console, and that is what they're trying to sell you on more so than anything else. But I think we're one generation away from that.
Yeah, and like people have already more or less accepted that games exist right now that you're not going to be able to put into a console 10 years later and just play. Like Destiny is a good example. The biggest games in the world, like GTA Online, Minecraft, and Fortnite, and those are games that if you tried to play it in 10 years, probably won't exist. I mean, who knows? Like they could be huge games, but for the most part, won't exist in the same capacity. And that is going to be a more difficult thing. But speaking of Fortnite, they actually just ditched their early access label and they're actually slowing development on the other half of the game that no one talks about, the Save the World thing. This is from IGN by Jordan Olderman. Fortnite is finally shedding its early access status, and as a result, development of its original Save the World PvE mode will slow down. The news arrives after 3 years of development, during which the game has become quite the phenomenon after it pivoted from its initial horde mode to battle royale. Recent months have even seen it boasting virtual concerts and Star Wars collaborations. I cannot read today. Hold on. Star Wars collaborations.
Man, that's me every day, man.
Something only one of the world's most popular video games can carry off. I'm going to blame Jordan Ullman for using words that are too hard for me. It's entirely his fault. Collaboration is a long word when you're just reading it for the first time, but for like just going through like, Wait,
when you don't expect it, when it comes from left field, you don't expect the word collaboration. Collaboration throws you off.
See, the thing, okay, the thing people don't realize about reading these things is that when you're already on tilt, it becomes just exponentially worse over, like, as you go through. It's like, oh, I just messed up the word 4 words ago. I'm going to mess up the next big word.
100%.
In a post on Epic Games blog, the development team revealed that Save the World's main story is complete, but that it will endure as a premium experience instead of being free to play. Fortnite players considered to be founders, those who purchased the game at full price, will have their founders packs upgraded as a result. Save the World mode won't be able to support all upcoming Battle Royale cosmetics, but existing player libraries will remain intact. As Save the World winds down, its content will rotate for replayability purposes. A new Ventures mode is coming to the game too, which will feature new season-long excursions and zones with new and unique modifiers to tackle. Players can take part in these ventures to progress through the levels, pick up venture-specific rewards, and upgrade their items to their personal collection. So, I'm shocked it took this long for them to do this.
Oh yeah, it's interesting that for both like the slowing down to Save the World mode and also stepping out of the early access, that feels like a thing that should have happened a year ago. But mm-hmm. I guess good on them for finally getting there, because Fortnite. If that game hasn't felt like it's been in early access since like 2018, at a certain point we grew to accept that, all right, Fortnite's here, it's the most popular game in the world. Like, if you're the most popular game in the world and everybody's playing you, like, there's a certain point where it's like, all right, this ain't early access anymore. Yeah, like, this is the real world. This game is out, we're playing this game, like, we're in here now. But yeah, all the legit everything here makes sense. What they're doing with Save the World makes sense. You know, I don't know anybody who's still playing Save the World mode. Yeah. I'm sure those people exist. I remember, I think it was Andrew Renee who might have been playing a little bit of it when it first launched. Like, I remember hearing those people, you know, giving impressions on Save the World and stuff. But yeah, like that, this makes sense. You know, Fortnite Battle Royale is kind of what the game is now, and so this all makes sense.
Yeah, I think they would have gotten a bigger gain from it if they just went ahead and made it free, but maybe they're afraid of splitting the user base a little bit and they want everyone just to focus on Battle Royale for cosmetics and whatever. It does seem like it's taken a bit too long to really just say like, okay, yeah, now we're sunsetting this, because I assume they were sunsetting it the moment that Battle Royale took off.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
like the story said, Fortnite is like a new thing. It's a different thing now. It's not just a PvE and a Battle Royale. It's like a virtual space, which is good because while the world is on fire, it's a place for people to gather and go to, you know, go to concerts and do things like that, which is honestly a big thing right now because you can't really gather in many other places.
Yeah, I kind of compare it a little bit to Apex Legends, because Apex Legends is a game where I'm at the point where I'm kind of begging for them to put out a single player mode for that game. Yes. And I wonder if we kind of make that circle around with Fortnite, where Save the World goes away and we get five years down the line and people are like, man, it would be great to have a Fortnite single player mode. It'd be great to have a Fortnite like actual campaign. And honestly, I think there's something there. I think there's something there in terms of sunsetting Save the World, and maybe like not necessarily throwing away the idea, but returning to it in a brand new way, in a way that kind of refreshes it and gets people excited. Because I never got to play Save the World, and so I don't know, like I don't know how that kind of landed for people in terms of like if it's people enjoyed it. Like,
standard horde mode, honestly. Like, the building stuff is cool, but it doesn't really make a huge difference.
I wonder if there's a nugget there that they could chase in terms of trying to actually make something that people fall in love with out of a single player mode.
But yeah, it's great that Fortnite can be a place people can gather, because they can't gather in amusement parks anymore. That's one of the things Nintendo is considering, because Nintendo's theme park in Japan will not open this summer. This is from Bloomberg by Takashi Mochizuki. Universal Studios Japan has decided to postpone an opening of a Nintendo-themed area that was originally scheduled for this summer due to the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic, people familiar with the matter said. The theme park, owned by Comcast Corp's NBC Universal, is expected to make a formal announcement as early as this week, potentially with information on the new schedule. When the two people said, asking not to be identified because the decision is not yet public. Construction of the area is nearly complete, and Comcast is still aiming for an opening this year, they said. Nintendo Co. and Universal Parks and Resort tied up in 2015 and announced they would bring Nintendo-themed areas within the Universal Studios theme parks around the world, beginning with Osaka's before the now-postponed Tokyo 2020 Olympics. The area is expected to boost visitors to the popular amusement destination and raise awareness of Nintendo's popular game characters and boost sales of the company's consoles and game software. Universal Studios in Japan didn't immediately reply for requests outside of comments on business hours. One of the people said the plan was for Comcast to open before the Tokyo Olympics and not in the summer of 2020. The Olympics is now scheduled to begin in July 2021. So yeah, I think that last line is probably the key part of it, is that this whole thing was always a... Japan was very much centered on making Tokyo 2020 Olympics a big thing. Mm-hmm. And now that those Olympics are delayed and still being called the 2020 Olympics, that doesn't make any sense for Nintendo to open this thing. Plus, I mean, I wouldn't go to an amusement park now, would you?
No, and that's the thing. That's the thing that kind of sucks about it, is that whenever we get these news stories that something's been delayed or something is canceled, specifically these physical gatherings, it's like, well, yeah, like nothing's happening. This 100% makes sense that they would delay the Nintendo theme park. It makes no sense for people to gather in this way this year for the foreseeable future. I'm really excited though for whenever this thing does open up, and I still want to go to Japan. And I still want Greg Miller to pay for it. And so
he said he would.
That's a I don't know if he said he would. Or he might have said he would. I'm sure.
No. Gary Whitta said he would pay for me to go to Japan if you guys get kind of funny to pay for you.
That's what it was. Gary Whitta just saying he'd pay for one of us?
No, he specifically said, hey, listen.
I feel like that's very convenient for it to be you and for you to be the one.
He specifically said
that.
Me because I'm his favorite.
That does make sense.
I mean, I can't argue that. But yeah, I want to go to Japan. I want to go to this theme park. I'm really excited for it. Have you been seeing some of the pictures that people have been taking from like outside of it, where like you can kind of see it being built and you see like images of like Goombas and stuff?
Yeah.
From outside the theme park. Every time I see one of those, I get really excited. I want to go to this theme park.
I really want to go, and I want to wait. I want to do both Tokyo and the Orlando versions, but I also want it to be more than just Mario. Like, I understand why they're starting with Mario. Like, it makes total sense. But I want a Zelda-themed area, too, and, like, a Pokemon area and all that jazz.
That stuff has to be coming. Yes. I feel like Pokemon could have its own theme park, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I would not be shocked if we get a Pokemon theme park announced that is, like, specifically Pokemon. But that said, yeah, I would love to go to a theme park that is Mario, Donkey Kong, Zelda, Pokemon, and, like, the big Nintendo franchises.
You guys, can you imagine a Breath of the Wild, like, fancy dinner restaurant?
Oh my god.
That'd be really cool.
Oh my god. And it's basically hot pot. It's basically like what Link cooks in the game, but it's
getting served. That's exactly what I was going for.
My girlfriend has like a cookbook that's like from Breath of the Wild, of like, she was showing me the recipes. They all look amazing, but it's like the stuff he makes in the game, they make like real life food versions of those things.
That's so cool.
That's really good. That's so good.
Yeah. All right. So this is kind of like, this is a big games industry story, but also kind of like a personal story for me. Andy McNamara, the editor-in-chief of Game Informer, has announced that he's retiring from games journalism after 29 years at that outlet. Andy McNamara has announced his retirement from games journalism today. He's been at GI since 1991 and has been part of 327 issues. So he is, I think I saw Frank Cifaldi today saying, no game journalism outlet has existed for 21 or 29 years. To be at that one position for that many years is literally unprecedented.
Wow. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. I saw this news earlier, and that's pretty wild that he's been at an outlet for 29 years. Like, that makes you, I mean, that makes you a veteran, but that also makes you like, that almost puts you in like founding father territory of, yeah, you have experience. You've been part of all of this. Shout out to him. Like, I don't know any McNamara personally. I've read Game Informer, obviously, and I've enjoyed Game Informer, and so that's awesome to see this, like, awesome to see that he's able to kind of, you know, have those years go by and experience this and be like, all right, cool, I've done my work, I'm done. Congrats.
So you follow me on Twitter, Blessing. You know that on Twitter I can be fairly spicy. I can say things that don't sound like, that come off very confrontational.
And that's why we love you, Imran.
So one time while I was working at Game Informer, I said I'm trying to do this without putting too many names to it, but I said a thing that pissed someone pretty big off in a way that, like, they took it very, very personally. that person then contacted Andy to say, I will like either fire this person or I will sue. And Andy talked to me about it the next day. It's like, hey, I just want to say, like, you're not in trouble. This is what we're going, like, this is what's happening. And I talked to, like, the whole thing lasted a couple of days, up to a week or two, I think. But I told him, Andy, if it helps, I will just apologize and I'll lay low on Twitter. I'll be better about what I say on social media. And Andy's response is something I'm never going to forget. He says, nah, fuck that. We don't negotiate with terrorists. And awesome. He said, as long as he is there, I will be protected from bullshit like that. And that is the kind of boss Andy McNamara was, that he went out of his way to protect his employees. And like, Andrew Reiner is going to be a great editor-in-chief as well, but God bless Andy McNamara, because if not for him, then I don't think a lot of game journalists would have gotten where they are in the industry today.
That's really cool. Yeah, that's really awesome.
Yeah. All right. To switch tacks from there, a PSVR patent has filed, PSVR patent filed for advertisements displayed within the headset. Oh, this is from Jordan Olerman again. That's why I'm tripping up in the headline, because it's all his fault. Yeah.
It's always Olerman.
It's always Olerman.
Always Olerman.
What is your problem, man? A new PlayStation VR patent filled by Sony Interactive Entertainment suggests that the company is working on technology that will allow advertisements to be displayed within the headset. The patent listing from Sony, published on June 25th, shows drawings that offer an example of how a virtual reality advertising model may look in practice. It appears that the advertisements will show up in the periphery parts of their vision. The top corners of the display are as a banner in the top middle of the screen. According to the text of the patent, the way advertisements will be displayed depends on the position of the user's head within the head-mounted display in their line of sight. The patent describes the advertisements as, quote, additional content for promoting recognition of a given thing or service. One example used in the text is of the user watching a concert with a set of performers appearing at the same time. Technology seems to be able to detect on which performer the user is focusing his or her attention, then change the advertisement in accordance with the performer of interest.
So, oh, I don't like this.
This is some dumb bullshit dystopia thing, but it reminds me of that old, I want to say it was a Kinect patent, of how to advertise to people and get them to physically interact with the ad. Do you remember the thing I'm talking about where he stands up from his couch and yells McDonald's and the advertisement stops?
Oh, no. No, I've not heard that. That's messed up.
I will have to show that to you at some point, but it's hilarious. Just because I just love the idea. So he's like, McDonald's! And this, I don't think they would ever go through with this. But it's smart. One, it's cool to know that they're patenting PSVR things, because that kind of throws Greg Miller's theory out the window that they're not working on a PSVR 2.
To be fair to Greg, he does think they're working on PSVR 2. He just doesn't think it's going to make the finish line and actually come out.
Possible. I could definitely see that. But who knows if this is one of those things that helps them be like, yeah, not many games sell for it, but we can advertise to people.
Yeah, and I think that is a bigger thing, right? Like, because you would assume that, yeah, this is them thinking about the future of VR in a very, very heavy way. And this is them thinking about how to monetize VR. And whether or not this actually makes it through, I don't think this is going to make it through. This very much strikes me a lot like when they patented the sweat stuff for the PS5 controller. Earlier in the year, where they patented like the controller would be able to measure how much you're sweating and how much like physical exertion you're making in order to measure that within a game. Mm-hmm. That this strikes me as very much in the same realm of weird stuff that they're probably prototyping and just throwing at a wall to see what works. And this will probably not actually make it through. The idea though that you could get basically like cookies based off of what you're looking at in I'm watching a concert in VR, and because I'm focusing on I don't know, man, is Common and Kanye are performing, and I'm focused on Common more than Kanye, and now I'm getting cookies based off of Common's new book that he just released. That to me sounds like a weird dystopian thing that at all levels I'm not okay with. I don't like, but also I feel like we're already here in so many ways, and so whatever.
Bless, yeah, it's just more of what you like. Let the computers do what they do best, you know?
Yeah, but like, do you know how much money I've been spending on Postmates? And it's all because of cookies, man. It's because they know what to sell.
There's plenty of restaurants near your house.
Yeah, but I don't have to leave if I order on Postmates. Cook. And after KFGD, I get tired, and it's like, all right, do I want to spend 30 minutes?
Take a nap.
Yeah, it's like a nap for 2 hours.
It looks like it's Sony that put that patent out.
Okay, that was a Sony patent.
Yeah.
So the McDonald's patent was Sony, which is still hilarious.
Yeah, the figure nine. He's got his arm raised. It looks like he's like McDonald's. Shouting it. Yeah.
Well, he has to shout McDonald's to get rid of the ad. That's fucked up.
I like it. I think it's cool.
Same McDonald's to end commercial. That sounds like a hostage situation.
But you get what it like. Can you imagine if you could just shout a word? Like, I'll learn all the words. Just end all the commercials?
No, man.
I'm all about that. And maybe I'll get that's some the Mickey
D's that's the equivalent
too.
To when you're getting bullied in high school and like the bully is like, say uncle, say uncle. That's literally the equivalent to what's happening in this patent.
No.
Your phone's already listened to you, Blessing. It's not that different.
Hey, Blessing, whatever, you man. Ever try to get whatever. Your phone to show you stuff? Like, you were like, man, I really want to get an ad for a like night table with a refrigerator in it. So you just start talking about it and hope that the Instagram puts it out there?
Dude, I don't know what you're talking about, but I do have an ad here for McDonald's, which is kind of weird. I don't know. I don't know what's going on here.
A friend and I once were walking in a mall that neither of us had ever been to, and we saw a name of like a store called like, I want to say it was like Ghost Skin or something like that. And we were laughing about it. And we joked about it. We were making like inside jokes. And then later when she was checking her phone on Facebook, she got an ad for that place that had never seen, that neither of us had ever heard before in our lives. But
that's just location.
I've heard,
though.
No, dude, I've heard too many of those stories. I know that there was, we were doing, I can't remember what, it's one of those Japanese studios that makes like very JRPG games. We were doing a, they did Square? An event at E3 last year, and we were talking about it with Jared Petty, and I pulled out my phone, and like it legitimately put me in an ad for that. Blue Point, maybe? No,
here,
I don't know.
I got a, it's definitely not Blue Point if it's JRPGs, but here, I got a solution. Alexa, are you listening to me?
I only listen after you say the wake word.
Okay, yeah. More. You believe that, sure. Yeah, the robots are going to tell you the truth.
Thank you,
Blessing. You're so young.
Have you ever checked the Alexa app wherein it has the recordings of everything you've ever said to it?
I've not checked it myself, but I have listened to like podcast. I think it was Giant Bombcast or Beastcast where they pulled out Dan Reichert's Alexa. Alexa, I'm not talking to you. Nope, please no. Stop. Turn off.
You know, it's
turn
really
off.
Funny is that one time after a party, Greg printed it out and there was like a lot of cool Greg trying to get it to do certain songs. It was really good, but he was also very drunk.
But yeah, I'm sure this clip exists somewhere on YouTube. It's Dan Reichert talking to his app. I'm not going to say the name of it. Talking to his app, and yeah, it's like all the pre-recorded stuff that like he's asked it for, and it's hilarious.
Yeah, like it keeps that recording in perpetuity. They know. I mean, granted, this is all a dumb thing to talk about on a podcast because we're being recorded right now. But still, like. We're already there.
With your consent.
Yes, with there. Our consent. Mm-hmm. So, speaking of apps, Discord is rebranding the shift away from gaming.
Can I say I love your segues, by the way? Your
some
segues
of them are
perfect.
Good. Some of them are fucking terrible.
For the most part, you've been killing it, though. Like, they're so it. Smooth that, like, we'll be half, like, halfway through the sentence before I'm like, oh, shit, that, like, we're it's the new story.
We're on a new story.
Whenever you start with speaking of, it's like, it's always a segue. That is the podcaster's crutch. It's like, oh yeah, I don't have anything here. So speaking of, so Discord, it doesn't have a new name. Oh, this is from Engadget by Igor Bonifacic. It doesn't have a new name, but Discord is effectively rebranding away from being an app dedicated to helping gamers communicate with one another during a tense online match. In a blog post titled published on Tuesday, the company announced it's changing its focus to make its software into a place where anyone can find a community, create their own chat server, and talk to their friends, whether they're into gaming or not. Quote, games are what brought many of you onto this platform and we'll always be grateful for that, the company said. Today, many of you use Discord for day-to-day communication. You're sharing thoughts about books, music, and art, and creating servers just to be yourself and share moments with friends. Practically speaking, what the rebranding means for current and more specifically new Discord users is a streamlined onboarding experience and updated templates that make it easier to set up a server. Moving forward, there'll also be fewer jokes within the app referencing games, quote, to make sure everyone can take part in the fun. Moreover, Discord claims user safety will be a major focus. Quote, we will continue to take decisive action against white supremacists, racists, and other people who seek to use Discord for evil, the company said. Discord says it has also fixed hundreds of bugs, as well as increased the voice and video capacity by 200%. So this is long overdue, I think, because Discord is better than Skype. for voice chat. It like it just plainly is. And I had to, I think it was last year or the year before, talk to my the person who was doing my taxes. And I needed to like actually like communicate, and she didn't want to do it over voice chat instead of over the phone. And I wanted to tell her use Discord, but she's an older lady, and I think all the dumb Discord jokes at the beginning of that thing, like rushing your zergs and all that's like every little like gamer joke at the beginning of that makes it less likely for somebody to get into to be able to use that thing and think of it as a professional place to talk.
Yeah, I'm on kind of both sides of this, where I think for them to lean away from the branding of Discord being online gaming makes 100% sense, because Discord is used for so many other things outside of that. In fact, for me personally, right, like using Discord, I've used Discord more so for Netflix parties and for we're doing it right now for this episode of Kind of Funny Games Daily and all our Kind of Funny content. We use Discord. The amount of times I've used Discord for actual online gaming totally is dwarfed by all the other times I've used Discord. And so it makes sense for them to lean off of that. But I do think there is something special there in terms of Discord's connection with gaming communities, which I wonder what their balance is going to be here in terms of leaning back from that. Because, you know, there's so many Discords I'm a part of that are gaming community specific Discords. Like I'm part of the Kind of Funny Discord. I'm part of the OK Beast Discord, and I'm looking like right now trying to see what other Discords I'm part of. I'm part of Irrational Passions Discord and Wolf Den Discord, and Discords that are built off of different gaming communities, because that's one where kind of Discord started, but also I think that's where they found their bread and butter. And I think that allows Discord to also have its own identity that works. Us not associating Discord with Skype or Zoom or Google Hangouts, I think, allows it to kind of exist in the space that really works super well for it. Mm-hmm. And so I think this move that they're making is ultimately good, but I hope they still kind of find a way to take ownership of of this space of video games and I guess voice chat. But also I'm also with what you're saying, that Discord works so well as an app that I would like to see more people use it. I would like to see it be accessible for the moms and the fathers of the world that aren't necessarily integrated with all this gaming stuff.
They did try to get more into gaming at some point. Like they tried to publish games and had a game store for a while, and both those endeavors just failed miserably. So I can understand why they're like, okay, yeah, we're good at this thing. Let's focus on this and like let's mainstream it out.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
I really like that they made a point to say that they are focusing on taking action against white supremacists and racists and all those ne'er-do-wells, which is something Twitch is also doing, which is put on your controversy hat, Blessing, because we're getting to a story of Twitch suspends Donald Trump's channel for hateful conduct. This is from GamesIndustry.biz by Brendan Sinclair. Twitch has temporarily suspended the official Donald Trump Twitch channel for hateful conduct. The account was blocked from view earlier today, I think this was written yesterday, with a Twitch spokesperson telling GamesIndustry.biz, hateful conduct is not allowed on Twitch. In line with our policies, President Trump's channel has been issued a temporary suspension from Twitch for comments made on stream, and the offending content has been removed. The representative highlighted two comments from the campaign rallies that were recently aired on the Twitch channel as examples of hateful conduct. So, before we started Blessing, I was like, do you think we should do this story? And we're like, yeah, let's go ahead and do it.
Yeah. And I'm currently on gamesindustry.biz because I want to know what the quotes that they cited were, because I think that's
so one of them was from a campaign ad, which was about they're not sending us their best people, they're sending us the rapists and all, you know, that famous quote.
Yeah, okay, then I'm with it.
The Tulsa like, Rally one, I don't remember exactly which quote that was.
So it looks like
also not great.
So from the GamesIndustry.biz article, they say here, the second comment was from Trump's rally in Tulsa, Oklahoma earlier this month, in which the president said, quote, hey, it's 1 o'clock in the world, or it's 1 o'clock in the morning, and a very tough, I've used the word on occasion, hombre, a very tough, okay, so it goes into him using the word hombre to describe.
He basically describes a scenario where someone, like, a foreigner crawls through your window and attacks you.
Yeah, a very tough hombre is breaking into the window of a young woman whose husband is away as a traveling salesman or whatever he may do. And you call 911 and they say, "I'm sorry, this number is no longer working. By the way, you have many cases like that, many, and this is very much a Donald Trump quote because it's very rambly. Whether it's a young woman, an old woman, a young man, or an old man, and you're sleeping. But yeah, he uses the word hombre to try and essentially describe what would essentially be a minority person. Yeah, I'm with that. That makes sense. Yeah, ban them. Like,
yeah,
you know, I don't think anybody should be exempt from your terms of service as a service like Twitch, right? Like, if you are having people abide by these rules, if you're having your users abide by these rules, if we have to, if a new user has to, if your big users have to, then yeah, like, hold everybody accountable. And so that being the case. Yeah, like Trump is saying some hateful speech here. Ban him. That makes sense to me. I'm with it.
Yeah. And I know it's come up in other kind of funny stuff recently, but like, I don't know if it's come up in KFGD, but fuck Donald Trump. Fuck people who support Donald Trump. If that's the wagon you want to join, then we're fine not having you here.
Yeah, and I highly recommend people listen to the Kinda Funny podcast last week's episode. I legit just got done listening to it last week, and they get very much into the nitty gritty of talking about the community and essentially how everybody has different views, everybody has different politics, everybody has different opinions on things, whether it's games, entertainment, politics, and all that stuff. Right? They go into detail on basically where we stand as a company, as far as, you know, who you want to support, what we're cool with, what we're not cool with. And it's not a thing where it's like, all right, if you're a Republican, you're not allowed to listen to our content. If you're this or that, you're not allowed to listen to our content. Like, it's not necessarily that. I think where we basically stand is, if you're with hate and you're with bigotry and you're with racism and you're with stuff that we're not, if you're with stuff that we define as just not okay, just not that, just a line that we're not cool with, then feel free to like see the door. You know, you're listening to a podcast right now with a black dude and a brown dude, right? It's me and Imran here. And like, if you're out here supporting racism, like, we'll be the dudes to tell you we're not with it. Like, don't listen to us. Like, we don't want you here. And so that's kind of where we stand with it.
Bless, I'm here too.
Kevin,
Kevin. Kevin, you're black.
We've had this conversation before.
I'm just saying, I'm here, regardless of what race I am. You know.
Oh yeah, Kevin's also here.
Kevin,
I just
also
like the running joke that I think Kevin is white.
Yeah, it's real funny. Keep making fun of my race.
I'm joking, Kevin. I love you.
I love you too, Kevin. Bud.
But blessing November, which is when you should vote, and if you haven't registered to vote, register on vote.org to find out information about how you register your vote. Is so far away. I wanted to know what is coming to mom and grandpa's today, where would I look?
I would go to the official list of upcoming software across each and every platform, as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show host each and every weekday.
Yeah.
Love it.
Out today, Legend of Heroes Trail of Cold Steel 3 is out on Switch. Little Town Hero, which has a bopping soundtrack by Toby Fox, even if the game itself isn't that great. But the soundtrack is amazing.
The soundtrack is great.
Yeah. Is out on PC. Hunting Simulator 2 out on PC, PS4 and Xbox One. Strikers 1945-3 is out on PC. The Story Tale is out on Switch. 12 Containers is out on PC. New dates. Crisis Remastered had a leaked listing on the Xbox Store, which said it's coming out on July 23rd, 2020. So look forward to that.
Whoa.
Deal of the day, the Xbox One Summer Gaming Sale includes a lot of Xbox One and 360 games for less than $15. So you could buy, let's say, Symphony of the Night, Dead Space, Alice Madness Returns, a bunch of kind of like their games that kind of, well, not all of them, but you can find games that kind of flew under the radar or were good that people don't talk about that much and are backwards compatible now for $4.99, for $5. That is less than the price of a coffee in San Francisco. All right, now it's time for reader mail. You can write into patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. You can get the show ad-free. And speaking of ads, this episode of Kind of Funny Games is brought to you by
Brooke Lennon. Did you know that making small changes to your everyday life can lead to huge positive changes to your lifestyle? The right towel turns a bathroom into a spa. The right loungewear turns function into luxury. The right bedding turns a bed into a retreat. You know Brooklinen as the internet's favorite sheets, but they're also home to bedding, loungewear, towels, and more with over 50,000 plus five-star reviews and counting. Kind of Funny loves Brooklinen, their luxury products at a low price, and Tim loves that he can get the right colors to match his room. We all know Tim is stylish. We all know Tim loves that blue. We all know Tim loves, if you've seen shows with Tim, you've seen the backdrop that he has, all the cool lights and colors. Tim is stylish, and he has Brooklinen because he knows that Brooklinen as well is stylish. Brooklinen was the first direct-to-consumer bedding company. They work directly with manufacturers and directly with customers. No middlemen. Just a great product and service. All luxury products without the luxury markup. Brooklinen.com is the perfect place to start making small changes that make big differences. Brooklinen is so confident in the products that all their sheets, comforters, loungewear, and towels come with a lifetime warranty. Go on, make yourself comfortable. Get 10% off your first order and free shipping when you use the promo code GAMES only at Brooklinen.com. Brooklinen, everything you need to live your most comfortable life.
All right, so Blessing, I got a couple of stories. We're going to figure out which one of these, or not stories, but reader mail.
Questions, yeah.
Yeah, we're going to figure out what we need to do. Let's start with Joy-Con Drift. Hello, Parker Petrov writes in and says, hello, Blessing and Imran. Nintendo gave a formal apology over Joy-Con drift. However, in 2020, how is this still an issue? I understand the issue happening at launch as mistakes happen in manufacturing, bugs, etc. However, they have sold through many batches of Switches, and I don't understand how we can still have Joy-Con drift in units. Do you think Nintendo should be more culpable in fixing the root cause of this issue instead of just offering to fix or replace Joy-Cons for free? So basically, last night they had their Q&A on their Nintendo investor conference, and somebody asked them about Joy-Con drift. They said they apologized for it, but they can't really talk about it because there's a class action lawsuit in the works. So there's not a lot they can say about it right now. So that was their apology for it. Nintendo right now, even if you bought a new Joy-Con from the store that was manufactured yesterday, it would most likely still end up having that problem, which a lot of
interesting,
which is like, over time, your analog sticks will start drifting more and more. I've never had this problem with the classic or the Pro Controller, but I have it all the time with the classic or the original
with Joy-Cons. Yeah, because I have Joy-Con drift on both my Joy-Cons, and it is frustrating. It is it's maddening, honestly. Yeah, I it's unfortunate. It's just an all around unfortunate situation. You know, I think it's one of those things where you just for some things you just don't know what the problem is going to be until millions and millions and millions of people are using a thing, you know, as opposed to the hundreds that you might have pre-launch that have touched the thing. And so given this lawsuit, given all that, like, I think it's just an overall just unfortunate situation that they find themselves in, and that I find myself in, having to use these fucking Joy-Cons that drift.
I think whatever the problem is with that thing, and I'm not an engineer, I don't know exactly what the problem is. I think if people knew, they'd be able to fix it. But I think it is more expensive to change the mold of the existing thing or figure out change whatever it is in the Joy-Con that's causing this issue than it is to just replace all these things for free. Because because most people are not going to send their Joy-Cons in, honestly. Like, that's the calculus they're taking is, yeah, we'll do it, but people are probably going to just buy new Joy-Cons rather than send it in, wait for a while, get them back, and then it'll happen again.
Yeah, and I think so many people also use Pro controllers. At least me, as somebody who I play a lot on my screen or on my monitor or TV when I'm playing my Switch, as opposed to the handheld. I know handheld people are pretty much just using the Joy-Cons, but
yeah,
I think there's a good percentage of people out there that are using the Pro controller, which doesn't have that issue, which might make it less of a big deal for Nintendo to feel like they have to address it as big and as immediately as possible. That said, I'd like to see this issue go away, and yeah, that's pretty much all I can say about it. Like, it's frustrating that this is still a thing that goes on.
Yeah, like, especially in games that, like, Animal Crossing is a good example of having to shovel at very specific angles that you will always miss the first time because drift affects it. So hopefully they do end up fixing that. Why don't we skip the next ones? And I didn't get a squad up today. I looked, and the only squad up I saw in the last few days was the ones you guys did yesterday. So you guys need to send more squad ups.
Yeah, send in your squad ups. Of course, you can write in. Let us know what your plan and what games you need people to squad up with. Of course, you can squad up with people in the community. You guys play together. You have a good time. You return. Let us know your stories. Let us know if you have squad up successes. We'll read those on the show. But yeah, if you want to play games with other people in the community, write in with your squad up and we'll read them.
All right, why don't we then go to You're Wrong, where people are going to tell us what we got wrong through the show. Usually it's nothing, but this time we'll actually check.
Usually it's nothing.
Let's see. Fortnite Save the World enter early access July 25th, 2017. So yeah, but Blessing was just saying that it should have been not in early access by 2018. Like, if you're in early access for more than a year, that's dumb.
If you're in early access and you become the most popular game on the planet, that's dumb. You're not in early access anymore. You're a game.
How do you pronounce that? Meininger? Joy-Con
Zach,
Drift.
Yeah, Meininger.
Joy-Con Drift is caused by the sticks not being mechanical like most of the controllers. Use a sensor that is easily messed up by dust and debris. Think of it like a computer mouse sensor. Nintendo went away from the mechanical switches to make the controller more compact, so it can't really be fixed that easily. Which kind of explains why they're... Yeah. I would like them, if they don't fix it this iteration, through whatever the next Switch is, because even the Switch Lite has the same problems, I would like them to have a more consistent method of having a thing that does not break so easily. Beyond that, there was a Pokemon Park. It was called Poke Park. It's now closed.
Oh, dang. I should wait. Neobod just also writes in with the actual Kinect patent that isn't the McDonald's thing. McDonald's thing was the PlayStation one, but Kinect did have a patent that was essentially them advertising through Kinect in ways that were notable. And so take with that what you will.
Yeah, I remember them saying like, oh, it's a new realm for advertisements. And honestly, but it was a new realm in 2011. It's not a new realm now, because now, like I said, phones just sort of do it. But yeah, I remember them saying it's going to be good for advertising then, and they never really did anything with it. That's breaking news. Not really what we're talking about here. All right.
Yeah.
So later this week, I am done with hosting duties, but Wednesday, Greg and Gary are going to come deliver you KFGD. Thursday, it's you, Blessing, and Greg. And Friday, it is Blessing and Greg again.
Yeah, it is.
All right.
Boo, more Imran. He's great.
Hooray. Now it's time for the post-show. Supporters of the Silver membership or above on patreon.com/kindoffunnygames get this. But until next time, Kind of Funny Games Daily.